Good evening. We have a couple of new faces tonight. Nice to see you. And you? You've been here before?
I have not.
You have not. You look familiar from somewhere.
Perhaps.
How did you find out about us?
When I moved to San Jose about 5 years ago, I searched online for sunsetters kind of in the area. It only took me 5 years to show up.
See, congratulations. Welcome.
Thank you.
And you?
I was here 2 weeks ago. I think you all were on Shishin. But I was also here 3 years ago before that with my mom.
Oh, yes.
I was actually in Boston for the last 13 years, practicing with Boundless Ways In with James.
With James?
Yes.
How nice.
Not with James, but one of his Dharma teachers, Josh.
Super.
So now I'm moved back to San Jose and living with my mom. And because I was here before, I thought I'd come again.
Welcome. Let's do introductions around.
I'm Britt. Sally.
Andrew. Russ.
Samia.
Claire. Wendy.
Ron.
Allie.
And Angie. We're not so many tonight. I think a lot of people are with their relatives or are cooking up a storm or maybe all of the above. It's a very busy time of year. We're just about the middle of the Genjo Koan. Okamura Sensei's translation of and discussion of it. Is a very, very helpful book. Which I didn't bring tonight, so, but I recommend very highly. We are on the eighth paragraph, or is it the seventh? Oh, it's the seventh. Do you remember? We did number seven. We're at number eight. It's the firewood becomes ash. This is one of the mysterious statements that he makes. I've got copies. Andrew and Claire can each have a copy. Thank you. So it sounds like this. Firewood becomes ash. Ash cannot become firewood again. However, we should not view ash as after and firewood as before. We should know that firewood dwells in the Dharma position of firewood and has its own before and after. Although before and after exist, past and future are cut off. Ash stays in the position of ash, with its own before and after. As firewood never becomes firewood again after it has burned to ash, there is no return to living after a person dies. However, in Buddha Dharma, it is an unchanged tradition not to say that life becomes death. Therefore, we call it no arising. It is the established way of the Buddhas turning the Dharma wheel, not to say that death becomes life. Therefore, we call it no perishing. Life is a position in time. Death is also a position in time. This is like winter and spring. We don't think that winter becomes spring, and we don't say that spring becomes summer. Last week, in number 7, it was about the self and all things, the relationship between self and everything, in terms of space. About riding in a boat and watching the coast and determining what's moving. Am I moving or is the land moving? It often looks like the land is moving if you see it as you go by. But then if you look down at the water, you say, oh no, the boat is moving. We often have that sensation that we are still and everything around us is moving, as if we were at the very still center of everything. And what Dogen is pointing out is that it's a mistake to think that we're permanently in position. We are continually moving in this huge dance, this enormous dynamic dance that the whole universe is doing all at once. But it's also in terms of time. And a few months ago, we were studying his chapter on time, being time, in which he talked about exactly this same thing, about spring and summer he used as his example, that spring does not turn into summer. Spring is its own time. We know when it begins and we know how it develops, and then we know when it's summer. It's quite remarkable and always a kind of almost a thrill as the seasons change one to another. Even here in California, where we always think there's hardly any change, still, this autumn has been brilliant with color. It isn't anything like summer, and it isn't anything like the winter that is to come. So Dogen is making another, helping us to see that, again, that the self isn't fixed. We're not stuck in place, ever. That what we are constantly is changing and transforming in endless number of ways, in time and space. And at the same time, we are in and as and by and with this own particular time and no other. We are the time that we are in. especially in our culture, we're often in a rush to get to the next thing. And Dogen points out many times that rush to the next thing is an illusion and a delusion. That our power resides and the truth resides in where we are. So when it comes to life and death, that gets very close to the bone. And again, it's often that we think that dying is somehow, and is in a sense, a kind of undoing of the body and the mind. But in the most basic sense, you're alive as long as you're alive. And once you're dead, you're dead. It's kind of like being pregnant. There's nothing in between. It's just this or that. And that's very nice, because much of what we think about death is the fear of that in-between. What's going to happen next? But one of my favorite Buddhist stories is a story I heard from a Tibetan Lama who said he attended to a dying old Lama, and all the students were standing around him and starting to cry, and he looked up from his deathbed and said, "You don't have to cry." He said, "You know, nothing happens." That's the truth of it. Life is life, and death is death. And death has its own position, and life has its own position in space and time. So Dogen also says in another place that each moment, everything is new and fresh. This is another teaching that runs all the way through everything that we know about this practice, what Suzuki Roshi called beginner's mind. It's such a merciful understanding, such a merciful insight. We're always starting over. We're never stuck in the past. So Dogen said, when life comes, just live, and when death comes, just die. I think that's very cool. And the tradition in Zen is that if you're dying, and you go to your Zen master, and you say, "Oh, I'm very sick," and they say, "I'm going to die," he will look at you straight in the eye and say, "We all have to die." Or as my friend Meili's son asked the priest as she was dying, her son asked the priest, "Why does my mother have to die?" And he said, "She was born." So we all get a turn. Though we don't like to think of it, and we don't believe it. So he distinguishes Okamura between two kinds of life and death, the life and death of karma, the life and death of ordinary beings who aren't aware of their place or their time, who they are or where they are, but are simply caught up in the rush and the flurry of life as it keeps on unfolding. or the Bodhisattva, which is in terms, living in terms of the vow to keep coming back. Now, there are endless debates about whether there is coming back. Some Buddhists, Tibetans especially, insist that there is coming back. And a number of Zen teachers do too. And other ones, and Okamura is one of them, says, I don't know. And that's what I have to say too, because how do we know? But the Bodhisattva vow of coming back means that whatever is happening now, I'm not going to try to get out of it and get the heck out of this painful place and never come back. So it means giving this life, this moment, more force and commitment than I know that I would have if I didn't have that vow of coming back. So it, psychologically, I think it's a very powerful vow, the Bodhisattva vow, to come back as long as there's even one person who has not the insight of the truth of things, of the truth of his own life. So that's pretty much what I have here. There's a long section in this chapter in Okamura's book about a couple of poems, one that Dogen wrote in answer to one that somebody wrote 300 years before. That's very interesting, and I encourage you to read it. But I don't feel equipped to go into it. It's too much for a few minutes in a Tuesday evening. But do look at it and look at Okamura's book if you have a chance. It's quite good. So there's time for questions about any of this, since we've gone through so many now. Yes.
You mentioned being thoroughly alive or being thoroughly dead.
Mm-hmm.
But do you? I think you may have said there's nothing in between. But do you believe that there's a transition between being alive and being dead?
There's a lot of talk about transition between being alive and dead. I'm just reading a document that Beth sent to me that she's writing a sort of complete explanation of what she's been doing for 10 years in Cambodia. And she talks about the transition and how after people have stopped breathing that they put them in a special place for the transition. She knows a lot more about living and dying than I do, so I respect that, and I don't know about it. And I haven't, in Zen, I haven't heard about it either. Though she's practicing Zen, she's also practicing Cambodian Buddhism, and much of what she's doing is bringing people's own religion back to them. So how much of that is the Cambodian side and how much of it is more general, I don't know. The Tibetans, of course, want to keep the body for 2 or 3 days, or weeks or months. My friend Tinley's husband, when he died, was, I think, enthroned and then stayed in the temple for several months and was apparently did not decompose because he was so special. So there are lots of stories like that in the Tibetan tradition. Or they completely just kind of the rainbow body takes over and they little by little they just disappear. There's nothing left but a little pile of dust on the ground.
Then they have this whole thing about 49 days and the Bardo plan.
Yes.
And the Book of the Dead, which is their own theory. But it's not really, I don't think they really say that person didn't die, the body died, and then there's some kind of karmic residue or something like that.
Yes. Well, they call it a lot of different vibration as one.
You know,
yes.
Moves on somehow.
Zen is that way too. Zen in Japan is supported by the funeral industry. The Zen temples do all the services, the funeral services, and they are not just a one-time thing. They do the 49th day thing, and then the third year thing, and then the 8th or 10th or 11th year, and it goes all the way into the 40s and 50s years. And people come in Japan, the family will come, 4 or 5 people dressed in black to the temple and ask the priest to please do a ceremony. And what he does is sit down and chant the Heart Sutra, beating on a little fish drum very fast. And then they all sit around and drink tea and smoke cigarettes and talk. It's very cozy, very, and the family gets to see each other for a little while, and then they all go off. But if there are 5 or 6 of those in a week, that's income for the temple because they pay the priest to do that. So it's a kind of industry in Japan. Which we don't have in America at all. We just don't do that. So we celebrated Koban's 49th day, and then we celebrate his death day every year. And Vanya wants to do something on his 10th anniversary, which isn't one of the right times to do it, but we thought we'd do it that way anyway. So being Westerners, we can fiddle with the tradition. Yes. Yes, Andrew.
I'm trying to make sense of this, which is probably my first mistake with my rational mind. But the first couple sentences, it says firewood becomes ash. So there is a sense of one thing becoming another. And then Dogen says it's a mistake to view it as firewood is before ash is there. So I understand that part as saying time isn't linear. But one thing might become something else, but it's not as necessarily in a before after way.
Well, what he says in the other chapter is that there is linear time. But if we think that's the only time, then we misunderstand, because the real time is nonlinear. It's like horizontal and vertical. We think it's horizontal and we plan our life that way and see things that way, but the truth of it is it's vertical. And if we don't include the vertical view as we live our life, then we're always running into something else and never standing in the midst of the Dharma, of the truth. So it is both, but it's very paradoxical.
Yes.
And everything he says in here is very paradoxical, that there are always at least two sides to everything, if not more. And that if you think it's just one side, then you're lost.
And he says, it seems to be a paradox. Later he says, firewood becomes ash. But then he says, it's an unchanged tradition not to say that life becomes death.
Mm-hmm.
So that's paradoxical.
Yeah. And that's about language also, about how we speak about what we experience. Often we think that how we say things is how they are, but we need to see through the words into the actual experience and experience it. The whole practice is about that. Where it is, where you are,
okay.
the place of it, in time and space.
Mm-hmm.
So there are the ideas about where things are, and then there's where they really are. So you have a Dharma position at this point,
mm-hmm.
and soon you will have another one.
Mm-hmm. I already do.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a funny thing to say, but it's how he's trying to point to how it's not fixed.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't stay put. We don't stay put.
Ash will eventually become firewood again, though.
Well, in 100,000 million years, it might.
Didn't they say we all have atoms that were in William Shakespeare?
Yes, yes, that's what they say. Yeah. Yeah, in that sense, we're all pieces of each other. And we'll continue to be. About 8.